You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, it's Tuesday, June the 8th. Thanks so much for listening. Lots to pack in through the next half an hour. Bright, beautiful, sunny morning here in TW11. Set to stay fair if forecast to be believed through the end of Royal Ascot Week, which will be music to the ears of two of my guests this morning. One of those, Chris Wall, had the dubious honour of landing the Fitzdares Loves the Nick Luck Daily podcast handicap at Windsor last night. He was asked by Sky Sports Racing's Matt Chapman whether he was a regular listener, and he confessed he wasn't really into podcasts. So I thought I'd better get him on one this morning to tell us not just about last night's great triumph, but also, more importantly, about his horse at Royal Ascot, Double or Bubble, who could yet give him his first winner at the Royal Meeting after 34 years. Wesley Ward's had 11 winners since 2001. He could yet have more. He's got 9 American Challengers touchdown in Newmarket. He gives me a lengthy briefing on which races they are likely to target. And talking of targeting big races, Charlie Appleby right out on the front foot yesterday afternoon, telling us that the Derby winner Adair would have his next race in the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes, a race that has had, let's face it, mixed fortunes in terms of the makeup of its field over the last decade and a half. It used to be the premier destination for a Derby winner midsummer to take on their elders. Now, in declaring this, as I welcome in David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, has Appleby, flush with success from the Derby, breathed new and much-needed life into what ought to be one of Britain's great midsummer horse racing showpieces?
I think he probably has, Nick, and when you say much needed life, I think you're absolutely right there in that over the last few years, we've been inclined to look at the Derby as the race that has been suffering and threatening to fall on hard times. But I think that that applies and more so really to the King George. Let's just go through you and I, and in fact, all racing fans would perceive that race as one of the great midsummer races, and principally after the eclipse, 3 weeks after the eclipse. It's the second clash of the generations, isn't it? And it's the first over a mile and a half. Just bear with me if we look through how the race has changed over the last couple of years, last say 35 years, in fact. If we go from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, the three-year-olds are dominant. Dancing Brave, Unlucky in the Derby, Reference Point, a Derby winner in 87, Venom Toto in 88, 89, Nashwan, of course, a Derby winner, 91, Generous, ditto, Saint-Gervite in 92, Unlucky in the Derby, probably would have won, according to Jim Bolger, if he had had a clean run. Then we had Opera House, an older horse, King's Theatre, of course, in 94, a three-year-old for Henry Cecil, and then Lamtara, the Derby winner in 95. Then things start going awry for the younger generation. And I want to contrast that decade with the last one, the last 10 runnings. And as I say, bear with me, there's a fair bit to digest. Last year, Enable beat two older rivals, Sovereign and Japan. In 2019, she had that magnificent fight with the older horse, Crystal Ocean. Anthony Van Dyke, the Derby winner, did run, although had been beaten by Sovereign at the Curragh in the interim and finished 10th. 2018, Poet's Word beat Crystal Ocean. Rostropovich was the only three-year-old. 2017, of course, Enable was a classic representative, having won the Oaks. 2016, Highland Reel, an older horse, Wings of Desire, was second and had been fourth to Harzand in the Epsom. Golden Horn would have run in 2015, but was a late scratching on account of the ground. Postponed, of course, won that day. In 2014, Togruder had won the Oaks, another John Gosden trainee. And then the last 3 years of this sample, Novelist and for Andreas Werler beat the three-year-old Trading Leather, who had won the Irish Derby, and Hillstar, who had won the King Edward VII. Daydream beat Nathaniel, who was a four-year-old. The only three-year-old in that race was the Japanese horse Deep Brillante. And then finally, Nathaniel won as a three-year-old in 2011, and he had won the King Edward VII at Ascot. So if we look at all that information, and I apologise, there was a fair bit to digest in a short space of time, but over the last 10 years, that idea that it's the clash of the generations has really fallen. It's no longer true, is it, really? And I think the reason for that, there is a quite easily identifiable trend, and that is over the last decade, if John Gosden has had the Derby winner or the Oaks winner or has done well at Epsom, then we're very likely to see those horses in the King George. If Ballydoyle and Aidan O'Brien have triumphed at Epsom, they're probably more likely to be saved for the Irish Derby. The only horse that I can find there, obviously, as a Derby winner, was in 2019, and that was Anthony Van Dyck. So for those of us who love this race as an opportunity over a mile and a half for the three-year-olds to measure up against the older horses, it's a great shame what's happened in the last 10 years and actually more. So by doing this, this is a very welcome call by Charlie Appleby, and it's quite a brave one with Adair. It's quite a nice, quite a ballsy call, isn't it, to put your hand down first and say, right, this is where we're going. It's up to you lot where you decide whether you want to run against us.
And there is some possibility that all three Epsom Group 1 winners from this year could land up in the race. Certainly Adair is likely to. Pile driver William Muir told us was likely to on this podcast yesterday. Not impossible for Snowfall, though Aidan O'Brien has suggested the Irish Oaks a week earlier might be a viable target for her, though surely with that age and sex allowance against older horses, it must be awfully tempting. Al Arzi, William Haggis and Shadwell have said he might go to the Hardwick at Royal Ascot, potentially. There's also the Eclipse dropping down in distance. The King George must be a possibility for him, however. It's just got the look of a terrific race. And let's not forget, In Swoop, Francis Graffard suggested if there was a drop of rain around the Arc runner-up, the race could come into consideration for him as well. So a real showpiece for Ascot. But of course, more immediately, that racecourse and we have our eyes trained on next week and the Royal Meeting. Five glorious days, we hope. And I've been catching up with the man who has lit up Royal Ascot over the last decade and a bit with his raiders from the United States, Wesley Ward. He is on British soil and now, having landed on Sunday, well acclimated.
You know, I think I'm going to have some really good chances. I got some really nice 2-year-olds this year. The two older horses are going to be very solid. So I think, everything's rounding into form, and, you know, it looks like we've got the weather on our side, which is key to our horses running well here. You know, anytime we get that rain and the course gets a little sticky, you know, it takes a special horse like Lady Aurelia and to overcome that sort of take a liking to that. You really don't know till you get here. So that's one issue I don't think we're going to have to deal with this year. So we're looking forward to everything.
Yeah.
My stable's getting better as far as owners backing me. And you know, I've got a bigger pool to choose from as we're getting closer. And so each and every year, I think I'm coming over a little stronger as far as, you know, from a bigger pool. And then the ones that we center in on and the ones that win in the States prior to coming. So, you know, it is opening up a little bit more as far as the turf races in America. At first, we didn't have any turf 2-year-old maidens. I had to run on the dirt. And so it was a little bit of uncertainty. And I was lucky enough with, you know, the first few coming over here that they took to the grass, because you really didn't even know. You don't even get to work on it in the mornings over there. Now they've kind of starting to change things a little bit to where it's, you know, you really get a good idea of what you have. So this year I'm coming over with a pretty strong group.
Now you've got lots of multiple entries, all sorts of interesting permutations, Wesley. Let's try and pick our way through and figure out what you're going to run where. You've got Ruthin, who was brilliant at Keeneland, Twilight Gleaming, who was spectacular at Belmont, Coffee Maker as well, all possibles for the Queen Mary. You've got a filly who could go Coventry or Queen Mary, possibly take on the colts, all sorts of permutations. What are you thinking at the moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we got a little closer and we got over here and we seen which ones traveled better than the others and they had their initial workouts here, I tried to get a couple weeks early. This way we can see which one acclimates good coming in, which they all have. And then pairing them up as to the ones that are in the same races, in their workouts anyways, which ones are better than the others. Those are the ones I kind of center in on, the Queen Mary. And And then you can get the ones that were just not quite as good in their works and maybe lean over to the Windsor Castle.
And that will all be done on recency rather than your initial impressions of them and what they've done so far.
Yeah, I mean, when they're at home, you know, and we're breezing them, you know, a lot of them flip when they come over here as well. Yeah, I think, you know, as we speak today, I think we're going to go with Twilight Gleaming in the Queen Mary, and Ruthin will probably go into the Windsor Castle. I mean, they were heads apart, but visually in their workout, it was Twilight Gleaming that was just an inch better. And that's not to say that, you know, if they were in the same race on the day, whether it be either one of those two, which one would be. But as you know, you got to go with which ones are better right now, or entry day anyways, and that would be Twilight Gleaming for the Queen Mary.
And it's a different call with the colts, because it's a question of going up or down in distance rather than necessarily who you put in a quote-unquote better race. So, for example, you've got Napa Spirit in the Coventry and the Norfolk. Would he be more of a 5 or 6, do you think, on what you've seen?
You know, I think maybe 6 now as we're getting over here. And, you know, they're still growing and they're maturing fast right now. You know, it's they're early in their two-year-old season. But he's probably going to be more to the 6. So, you know, as we're getting closer to this, we're going to make a decision. And also talking with Barbara Banky's team, you know, with Ben McElroy and Ian Brennan and Barbara herself, you know, we'll come down to a decision here, you know, as we get a little closer.
And what about Coffee Maker? You've got her in potentially against the colts in the Coventry or all the options for the fillies. What are you thinking?
Yeah, as we're talking right now, I'm thinking of the Coventry for her, even though she's a filly. She's just, you know, she's kind of outrun her pedigree, so to speak. You know, she's modestly bred, but she's got a big, long stride and big, long action to her. She had a very, very nice workout on the Golden Mile there at the Limekilns there. Very, very impressed with her. So I think we're going to shoot towards opening day here and run her in the Coventry.
Against the colts, which is a big call. And is that because you've already got a Golden Bell for the Albany? Is that the thinking there?
You know, yes and no. It's just she's the now horse. And, you know, the closer when you're kind of thriving and doing well, you want to kind of center in on this race with her. You know, I don't know if I have another horse in my stable that could beat her going 6 furlongs. There may be some that could beat her going 5, but certainly not 6. She's got a big long stride, like I just said, and covers the ground nice and got a beautiful mind on her where she'll settle. And it's not like one of those that I'll bring over that'll just, the gates will open and she'll be gone. I mean, she's very rateable. So I think we're gonna shoot for the Coventry with the filly.
Okay, and you've got the two older horses, Maven and Campanelle, in the Kingstand and Commonwealth Cup, respectively. Am I right in thinking that Frankie rode Campanelle a piece of work on Sunday?
Yeah, he was happy with the work, really happy. We breezed her with Golden Bell, you know, kind of put Golden Bell 4 or 5 in front with a little galore on that weighs about 100 pounds, and Frankie just set right back off her, and they just came and finished up on the line together, and Frankie came off and he said she's doing great. We galloped her actually this morning on the July course. They opened up the July course, which Frankie worked Maven, and I had my cowboy exercise rider just galloped her right behind so she could kind of get a feel of the course if that's the direction we were going to go, you know, pending the result of the Commonwealth. But she's doing great.
And you always like to sort of introduce us to American jockeys we might not have seen before. I know Frankie will pick up some rides for you, but who else is going to be riding for you next week?
Next week it's going to be Johnny Velasquez. He's the only rider coming from the States to ride, you know, due to the COVID. So he's going to come in early and do all the quarantining and all that. He's coming in, I think, tonight. He boards, so he'll be in here on time. To get all that out of the way, and we've got Frankie riding probably Napa Spirit if we go that way with him, and Frankie will also ride Campanelle that we just talked about, and then O'Sheen Murphy will ride the Norfolk with Nakatomi.
Wesley Ward there, Dave Yates still with me. Dave, it looks as though it's a very well-oiled machine this year. You'd be terrified, frankly, if you were a British or Irish trainer with a decent two-year-old going to Royal Ascot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's a weird one, that, isn't it? It's a sort of like no more Mr. Nice Guy when he's already ruled the division, or when he's already won 11 races at Royal Ascot. And yeah, the idea that in some way the 2021 challengers have been better prepared than the horses that preceded them, when you think of the, you know, the groundbreaking success that Wesley Ward's had, it's going to be tricky for the home contingent. I think that is this me, or is it that thus far we haven't seen that many star 2 year olds in Britain and Ireland either? I may be, it'd be interesting if listeners disagree with that, Nick, but my impression thus far, there aren't too many horses that I've seen this year that I think, right, that'll win that. Do you know what I mean? I think that I don't like to use the phrase much of a muchness, but I don't think that I've seen too many outstanding juveniles here so far. So if the Wesley Ward team have had a seemingly a better preparation, and that they're using grass these days rather than dirt as a build-up for Royal Ascot, considering what he's done in the past, who will forget the likes of Lady Aurelia and that demolition job that she did in the Queen Mary a few years ago, then it could be a pretty difficult 5 days for the Home Guard.
Very nasty incident, Dave, last night at Windsor involving two horses falling. One of those sadly had to be put down. Jockeys Ali Rawlinson and George Buckle were taken to hospital. Ali was the more seriously injured of the two, but he's communicated this morning to suggest that whilst he's got injuries to his ankle, quite a serious one as well, and to his ribs, that his head, neck, vital organs are all in working order. So he counts himself lucky. Well, there's kind of lucky and lucky, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of jockey's lucky, but not everyone else's lucky, really. Obviously, you know, what he means is that all those injuries will heal, and there's none of the stuff that some jockeys have had to deal with, which will be longer lasting. I mean, you know, we always do this on the NLD and in other programs too, sort of reflect in horror sometimes at the dangers that all jockeys face. But I defy anyone to find more frightening images than these in sprint in 5 furlong handicaps, Nick. You know, I mean, and please, when I say that, don't think that I'm in any way belittling the dangers that steeplechase or hurdles jockeys face. But there's something about the thoroughbred going at absolutely full tilt and these sort of things happening. I'm very sorry that we lost Michael Atwater's Diligent Lady, and as you say, both jockeys taken to hospital. And in saying that the news is good about Ali Rawlinson, I suppose what we're really saying is that it could have been an awful lot worse.
Well, we were very honoured last night when one of our sponsors of this podcast, Fitzdares, named the delayed 7 o'clock at Windsor the Fitzdares Loves the Nick Luck Daily Podcast Handicap. It was won by the favourite Goldie Hawk, which I think we predicted on the show yesterday, trained by Chris Wall, after which Sky Sports' intrepid Matt Chapman, that's a second name check for him on today's podcast, asked the trainer whether he was a regular listener, to which he had to confess he'd never heard of the thing. So I thought, well, what better than to introduce Chris Wall to the podcast this morning. Congratulations and well done, Chris.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, all went well last night.
And you paid me a big compliment by saying you weren't up to speed with this modern technology, which made it sound like I was down with the kids, which was very nice.
No, I haven't got round to podcasts yet. My son keeps sending me podcasts on WhatsApp to say, oh, you must listen to this, Dad. And eventually I get round to listening to some of them, but I haven't got into the regular habit yet.
Well, we feel very honoured. Of course, his first challenge to me was not to get you on, but to get Goldie Horn on in celebration of Goldie Hawk. Where I think I was up against it slightly.
Yes, I was right. I suspect we wouldn't have been allowed to call a Goldie Horn without the lady's permission. And when we did apply for this name, Weatherby's informed us that Goldie Hawk was a published author. So having done a bit of research, I found that she'd written some pamphlets for the National Trust. And so I wrote back to the Weatherbys and said, well, with all due respect, and I do respect the fact that the lady's a published author, but that writing a few pamphlets for the National Trust doesn't make a Jane Austen, and would they reconsider, which very kindly they did.
So Goldie Hawke it was, and Goldie Hawke won quite tidily last night. Could this yet be a horse of significant potential?
She's still an improver, Nick, and obviously Mr. Foustock, who owns her, is an owner breeder, and she'll have value at his stud, but we'll be trying to improve her value for the stud by looking for some black type. Now she's won four handicaps. There's not a lot more to be achieved in that direction, even though she probably could win another one. But then I think now we need to go down the black type trail and see if we can't squeeze a bit of black type for her.
And you've got a really exciting filly that, you know, could yet get significant black type next week at Royal Ascot. I was really impressed with her on her seasonal debut at Newmarket. She's called Double or Bubble, and we haven't seen her since. Have you just been waiting for the ground?
We have, yes. The plan after the after she won at Newmarket, we were going down the same route as we did with her full sister, was called Mix and Mingle, and she won that handicap at Newmarket and then won the Chartwell Stakes at Lingfield. And that was the route we were going down with this filly, but the rain put paid to the Lingfield Challenge, unfortunately. So we've had to wait for this. We could have shipped her up to Musselburgh at the weekend for a filly's listed race up there over 7 furlongs, but I thought that Musselburgh's a bit of a tricky track, and it's a little bit draw dependent. If we'd had a wide draw, we'd have probably known we were going to get beaten before we set off. So Mr. Foustock said he was keen, if we could, to run her at Ascot. So we've kept our powder dry for that, and she'll run in the Duke of Cambridge.
I was going through your back catalogue earlier, Chris. You've trained multiple high-level winners and top-level winners, not just here, but around the world as well. I couldn't find anything at Royal Ascot, and I had to check myself.
No, sadly, it's one of the things that's missing from our CV as a Royal Ascot winner. We've had a couple of near misses, but we've never quite made it. After 34 years, we're due a turn, I think.
Trainer Chris Wall there. I will continue my quest for Goldie Hawke, but very happy for the time being to welcome Chris to the show. So it's Tuesday. We go around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherbys, their stallion book, and their excellent Global Stallions app, on which you will find the following at the moment: Cotai Glory, Galileo Gold, Kodiak, the great Kodiak, Memas, quickly becoming the quite significant Memas, Inns of Court, and Kassar. What unifies that sextet? Well, they are all based at Tally Ho Stud, which has been under the ownership of Tony and Anne O'Callaghan for 40 years. It's a family operation, and their son, Roger O'Callaghan, is a huge part of that success and is with me now. Roger, good morning. Welcome to you. Welcome also to Brody, who I think I can hear in the background.
Thank you for having us.
Not a bit. So Brody's how old now?
A year. Nearly a year.
So take me back a little bit to your own childhood, maybe a little after you were Brody's age. But what were your earliest memories of the stud and the breeding world and what you were born into?
You'll laugh. My earliest memory is Dad taking Breezers to the Curragh to gallop in our lorry, and me falling out the back of it on the way home. And ended up in Nace Hospital for a few days.
And this was not enough to deter you. You were straight back in the game.
Yeah, then I pretty much football and rugby got in the way for a while, but the lure of the horse took over.
Tally Ho, you've been standing stallion since the early 90s, so about 25 years. So although you're all steeped in the game and your family are steeped in the breeding industry, Brody agrees with me anyway. Tally Ho's own stallion station is relatively young. An awful lot's happened in a relatively short space of time, hasn't it?
Yeah, but to be honest, I think even before we stood stallions, Dad would have put money into stallions with the McHenrys, and I think maybe even Rathbarry before he stood stallions himself.
And so you're first major success at Tally Ho was which stallion? Who really set the ball rolling for you?
I don't know. I always remember Petardia getting the winner of the Rockfell, and he'd Hamahira and Name of Love in his first year. Two group winners, a group winning colt and group winning filly in his first year. That's my first memory. And then I suppose he never really took off, but then Dame Time came along and he really did take off. He opened doors for us. So we all of a sudden we started breeding group one runners, and we started getting a better return on our stock, and we could invest in a better caliber of mare. You know, the whole thing starts to buy, you know, more land, better foals. The whole thing starts to...
Do you have criteria to select a stallion? And if so, what are they?
Hard and fast rule, to be honest. Just to show a bit of class, I suppose. That would be class or pedigree. There's no rules, because Dame Time was third in two group ones, and he won the... He was second in the World Cup as a three-year-old. You know, the Kodiak never won a group race, but yet... We've Galileo Gold, who won a Guinea. So there's no hard and fast rule, Nick.
But I guess you've got to think people need to want these. There's got to be something about them that's a hook that gets people to, you know, to spark fire their imagination, if you like.
I suppose it's got to fire our own imagination, and if the others come, well and good. Like Dame Time and Kodiak did it the hard way. Right? Like Mimas covered more mares the second year than he did the first year. The only thing is, Nick, as long as we can send a lot of our own mares, we'll be happy with.
And does that really underpin the business, your own broodmare band? Is that what's firing the business primarily?
Yes, in my opinion, yes. Because we send the guts of 40 mares to each of the stallions every year, 30 to 40 mares, and it does underpin them. It's particularly in year two and three when, the question marks are out.
Well, I want to ask you about some of the stallions that you've got at the moment. Kodiak, everybody knows. He's been a wild success story. When did you realise you were onto something really quite special?
I always remember Con Mernan ringing... When Kodiak, he had a couple of Kodiaks to breeze, and he said, "These are good." I'll never forget it. And Dad was always of the opinion that they used to try. And from then on, Dad was hooked. So Dad saw it before most, I'd say. They ran plenty too, Nick. You know, it was, they used to run every couple of weeks, and they gave their best, which was, you couldn't ask for more. And like, he covered, you know, very average mares at the start. He covered the damn Tiggy Wiggy yesterday, which was great to see. It was great to see.
So a lovely reunion, and she was one of his most celebrated, fastest sort of early flag bearers, really. But he's had Group 1 winners at... I suppose we're seeing something similar with Memas, by acclamation. Because although he's had brilliant two-year-olds like Supremacy and Minzal, we saw the other day Memento winning the Surrey Stakes at Epsom. You know, a slightly different type of horse developing at a slightly different stage of his career.
Yeah, for sure. I must give Archie Watson a lot of credit for Memento. He's done a great job with him, Nick, because we had him for the breeze up, and I must confess that when Tom Biggs was buying him, that I told him he'd win a race. I never saw him being as good as he was. So, you know, credit to them.
And, you know, you can be in this game an awful long time. How often, Roger, are you genuinely surprised by something that happens on a race course?
Every day. Every day. And long may it last.
You have debuted Galileo Gold this season with his first two-year-old runners. How much of a kick did it give you to see Ebro River winning the National Stakes for the same connections that race Galileo Gold, Al Chakab and Hugo Palmer?
I got a huge kick out of it, Nick. We got a huge kick out of it. In fairness, Nick, he was always a very good-looking horse, but people had little interest in Galileo Gold last year, even though he hadn't had a runner yet. And for him to come out, I know he wandered a bit, but I'd like to think that in a better race, he'd have to do more and he would work harder in the race. I kind of have a feeling that, in fairness to Hugo, he, before that horse ever ran, he told us to send the Dam of Ebro River back to Galileo Gold.
And I'm looking forward to a bit of sport, Roger, when Kesar has his first stakes winner, because this was the subject of a bit of debate on one of my Sunday programmes a few years ago when he retired to stud at the end of his two-year-old career. And I was with Lee, who's a regular correspondent here, Moss said from the Racing Post, and we were talking about whether Stallion should have to race beyond two in order to retire.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to Kesar proving yourself and Mr. Modest head wrong. I'll put it to you like that.
I think it is an interesting argument and it's an interesting debate. As someone who's done it successfully, what would be the case for the defence, if you like?
Well, where do you start? For a horse to retire too, they must have done something to prove they are good. You know, to set them above the... setting above the average, whether it be fast and ran plenty or, you know, showed a lot of class. Like, just for our own, with Memos, Sir Prancelot, Sebedee, have all, you know, proved that theory to be false. But it's a bit like the selection, Nick. We have to try and find a horse that we can afford, that's for sale, and will be in addition to, well, you'd like to think might be in addition to our broodmare band.
So how's Kesar going? How are his yearlings going?
Look, not too bad. To be honest, Nick, we'll start bringing him in next week, and then I'll have a stronger opinion on whether I like him or not, is the honest answer. We've a lot of yearlings, and when I walk into the field, I don't know too many of them, to be honest.
Here's an interesting thing, Roger, and this is something that strikes me, is that, yeah, I speak to a lot of people doing this show, and they will sell their stallions, and they will sell them hard, because that's what they're supposed to do. Am I right in thinking that you manage your own expectations for your stallions until they've proven to you they can do something?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's much easier to let the horses do the talking than yourself, isn't it?
Roger O'Callaghan there from Tally Ho Stud, and best of luck to them for the remainder of the year. One man who doesn't have a problem letting himself do the talking, David Yates, is going to give you a winner to round off the show.
Yes, I hope so. It's in the 5:40 race, number four, For Us, if you prefer. A decent run at Newcastle at the end of April on the return to action for Grant Chua's four-year-old, and the race didn't really unfold on turf last time. So back on the all-weather, off the same mark, and with the yard going great guns, I hope that For Us can win a second career race. 5:40 at Wolverhampton, selection number four, For Us.
Yatesy, thank you very much, and my thanks to Wesley Ward and to Roger O'Callaghan and to Chris Wall earlier on in the programme. Thank you for listening as well. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, please make sure you subscribe on all the well-knowns or any of the well-known podcast platforms, and that'll make your life much easier. And do tell your friends and rate us, review us, tell us what you'd like to hear more of. We'll see you again tomorrow. That's Tuesday, June the 8th. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.